Hello and welcome to Ace Your Space, Declutter Your Life, Free Your Time, Reclaim Your Energy. I'm Leanne Pruitt, your host. I'm really excited about today's interview. I have my friend Cheryl Rice with us today. Hello, Cheryl. Welcome.
Good morning, Leanne. It's a pleasure to be here.
I am so excited that you're here. I want to tell the audience a little bit about you so that they know what goodies they're in for. As president of Cheryl Rice Leadership, Cheryl inspires women to be leaders in their own lives. For over 20 years, she has helped women cultivate leadership presence, develop confidence, and establish mindful approaches to work and life. Her clients include Pfizer, Penn Medicine, and Campbell Soup. Now, Cheryl has held significant positions in healthcare and financial service industries, including Director of Organizational Development for AstraZeneca and AVP of Leadership Development at ACE International. Now, Cheryl is the author of the memoir, Where Have I Been All My Life? And she has essays in the Philadelphia Inquirer, the Chicago Tribune, and Maria Shriver's blog, Architects of Change. Now, in 2016, Cheryl founded You Matter Marathon, a global kindness and community building program. And I want to say we're going to talk about that. That is such a cool thing. Cheryl holds MS degrees in counseling and in organizational development. She's a certified coach, has certificate in positive psychology, and has taught university classes. She is a fervent litter picker-upper, an ardent fan of Karen Carpenter, and once spent a week sequestered in a hotel participating in a clinical trial for a cure for the common cold. Cheryl, well, that is something. I love that. And first of all, I have to tell you, when I read your bio the other day, I went around the house singing Karen Carpenter songs.
So. Maybe dating ourselves, but it's okay, Leanne.
It's contagious. Listen, I am so inspired by you and all you do. You went from some really impressive corporate positions to what you do now. Tell us more about yourself and your journey.
You know, I would say my journey actually began, and I don't want to scare people, I'm not starting at the very beginning, but when I was 11 years old and I was sent to summer camp, and I was one of these kids that was tragically homesick. And instead of just getting through it myself, I found what helped me even more was helping other kids who were also homesick. And in that community, and when I gave myself permission to get out of my own way and help someone else, I felt better myself. And frankly, I think that has been a metaphor for my journey, is finding my way home back into my own self. The title of my book, Where Have I Been All My Life, that journey towards love and wholeness of self. And then also passing it on by helping other people, most commonly women, find the home within. And I think that's a beautiful tie-in to your work as well. It's about finding home, both metaphorically as well as tactically in the environments we've been on. So yes, I had the corporate positions, and at a certain time I realized that I really was dedicated to being a practitioner, and I couldn't do that in a corporate setting. Mm-hmm. So I left to start my own coaching and speaking practice about 20 years ago. And I'm just so grateful that I've been able to sustain my practice and actually thrive as an individual coach and speaker.
I love that. Now, let me ask you, when you were 11 and when you were at that summer camp and you were homesick and you started helping the other homesick kids, were you actually aware enough at that point in time to realize that helping the others was making you feel better, or did you just kind of decide that later?
That's a good question. I'm sure I wasn't aware in that language. I think I just knew that it gave me a sense of community, that I wasn't alone, that there were others. And even some of the other counselors actually were lovely to me and helped me realize that I wasn't a misfit. And this is where the inner critic comes into play, because not only was I homesick, but I had a tape going on in my mind telling me I must have been pretty awful. Number one, you know, what horror must I have committed to be banished from my home and to be sent to camp? So I had a whole record in my head about that, my badness. And it really just, I think over time, I learned that it wasn't anything certainly that I did wrong. It was quite the opposite that sent me to camp. But I think I did not have the awareness to know this is a strategy. It was just, I didn't want to be the only one feeling this way. and then realized that I actually did enjoy the connections I made when I was talking to other people and coaching them, you know, to get involved in the activities, et cetera.
Got it. Like that. Now, the title of this online show is Ace Your Space, Declutter Your Life, Free Your Time, Reclaim Your Energy. What does Ace Your Space, or the title of this series, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, this is such a great question. And I think the very first word that came to my mind when I saw Ace Your Space, frankly, was alignment. And to me, if we're acing our space, what's happening is that there's alignment and congruence between our outer life, the stuff we have, you know, the tangible acquisitions, the homes, the merchandise that we have, and even the relationships that we surround ourselves with our interior life, alignment between the outside and the inside, and the interior life of our values, our purpose, and our vision. And when we are aligned in that way, to me, we're acing it. We're acing our space and we're thriving.
I love that. That's a really good answer. Yeah, exactly. Having our own internal values and purpose and stuff reflected in the outer area.
Right. And it's not a one-time thing. I mean, the things that as a 16-year-old would have been aligning, you know, my stuff with my interior life was very different than it is now. And I think even in this time of pandemic, I think I'm sure you're seeing this in your business. A lot of people are questioning, what do I really need? What does it mean to be congruent between all the stuff I've accumulated? Now that I'm in my home, most of us a lot more going into closets questioning, do I really need this? Do I really need to color my hair? Do I really need 6, you know, whatever, toaster ovens, whatever it is? So I think this is a time when people are really intrinsically asking this question. So your gift to the world right now is so incredibly timely, Leanne.
Well, you know, interestingly, I think that one of the speakers, what her answer to this question was, when you've aced your space is something that, you know, like nurtures you and gives you energy. It doesn't sap it away from you. And I think that a lot of, you know, before this pandemic, when we were able to go other places, we would go away to work. We would go away to this or that place. We didn't necessarily focus on the fact that what is our space giving us? Is it nurturing us and giving us energy, or is it sucking it out of us? And when a lot of times, now that we're home and are staying home much more, we see that. More. We can't go off to work if the house right. is bothering us. Mm.
And we feel it.
Yes.
I mean, we see it and we're experiencing it. And I think that's where the impetus for change comes. Mm. It's not intellectual. We're actually experiencing our homes in different ways and our stuff and our habits in different ways. And for some of us, that's a opportunity for reclamation of sorts and a rethinking of things.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Now, you know what, I wanted to have you on this interview series because, you know, clutter is not just physical. It's not just the pile over there in the corner or your junk drawer or your closet, those kind of things. It's really anything that gets in the way of you and what you want to do in life, your goals and dreams. And you know what, there's a huge emotional and mental component to that. Now, one of the biggest things that we need to declutter and that gets in our way are those voices in our head, you know, like our inner critic. So I want us to kind of talk about that today and to kind of start this discussion out. What is an inner critic? It's kind of so we're all on the same page.
So the inner critic is, as you alluded to, that voice in the head that is actually one of judgment, criticism, and harshness. It usually shows up in a harsh tone. So most people have one, and they were developed in childhood. And the inner critic really is, sometimes I refer to it as the monkey mind, and Buddhism talks about the monkey mind, or the inner roommate. You know, I remember my daughter coming home from school her freshman year in college, just, you know, at Thanksgiving break, complaining about her roommate, who was just this and that and the other thing. And I think that's a great metaphor. It's like that roommate that we can't shake. You know, and she's like, I got to change. I can't stand it. You know, it's a lousy environment. Well, that's what the inner critic can do for us. It can really sully our space, our interior space, by being harsh, judgmental, and critical. So it's a name calling bully, the bully inside.
I love that. I love that. The inner roommate. I got to remember that. So you know what, where do they come from? I know you mentioned that they started in childhood. So where does this inner critic come from?
Well, in my experience, the inner critic really evolves from three sources, and yes, childhood, and more specifically from the messages that our primary caregivers implicitly or explicitly gave us, you know, mm-hmm. And I want to say that those primary caregivers in 99.9% of the time had the best of intentions, and still, because we're all human, mm-hmm. sometimes there were messages that were conveyed that form the basis or the nuggets of the inner critic inside us today. So it could be things like, you know, you must always be kind to others. And while you think, well, there's nothing wrong with that, being kind to others is certainly important, but there are times when sometimes our kindness can be taken advantage of, or it's not always in our best interest to be kind. Mm-hmm. So if we just have that as a default, you always must be kind, or you must let men speak first, or there are messages we get that don't serve us. Over time, as we get older and we want to have more choice. So that's one place that the inner critic gets its history from, is well-meaning caretakers. A second place is what we told ourselves as children when we didn't get our needs met. Mm-hmm. And for just about everybody I know, there was at least one need that we didn't get met. Again, this is part of childhood. And it's what we tell ourselves. So if we're in a situation perhaps where our parent is unavailable, either through work or addiction, or perhaps divorce, we might tell ourselves, it's because I'm not smart enough. It's because I'm not kind enough. It's because I'm not blank enough. And that, again, is another area where the inner critic just thrives and will latch on to an explanation, because that's what children who really are inartful and inexperienced in coming up with a better explanation in their narcissistic, childish ways are gonna grab on to something that's about them. And right. It's almost always critical. Mm-hmm. And the third place, and I think a lot of people, especially women, will understand this, that our inner critic comes from, is media. And there's hardly ever an advertisement or commercial that's really not, when you take it down to its base level, targeting the inner critic. And I'll just give you one example. And in my own work, I share many, many other examples. But a simple one for our purposes is, and I probably used to have this makeup in my medicine cabinet, Clinique, and they have a foundation that's called Beyond Perfection. Beyond Perfection. So it's no longer enough for us just to try to, you know, have a good enough face on, or even a perfect face. Now we're going beyond perfect. What that is, I don't know, but Clinique is selling it in a bottle for, I don't know, $40 or $50. So that is totally aligned to that inner critic in us. I said, oh, I want some of that. I want some of that. So the third area is the media. So the constellation of our caregivers, the messages we gave ourselves when we didn't get our needs met, and the media give us a very fertile field for creating the voice of the inner critic. And so I also want to say, Leanne, if it's not incredibly obvious after that explanation, it's not our fault. Like, most all of us have an inner critic. And to some extent, as we'll talk about a little later, it can be incredibly functional for us. The challenge goes when we don't identify the voice, or when we over-identify the voice of the inner critic and believe that's all we are. So I just want to say to the viewers, number one, you're not crazy for having one. Most people do. And number two, it is something that is in our control, but it is not all of who we are. It is just a part. It is just a voice.
Well, I know when we were children, that inner critic voice probably came up when we were trying to explain, like you said, why we didn't get whatever need was met at the time. We needed to reconcile that within ourselves. When now are these, like for women our age and stuff, when are these voices likely to show up?
Two primary ways these voices show up. The first, which I think a lot of people will relate to, especially now, is anytime we're under stress, right? Hello, pandemic, right? If we weren't stressed before, we really all are dealing with so many more stressors. And I can't tell you how many of my own clients are having their inner critic just wreak havoc on them, thinking, especially in the spring and now as we're preparing for fall, how to be a full-time employee and work remotely, something they never did before, full-time teacher and educator and disciplinarian at home, and still maintain a household and a relationship with their spouse. So the inner critic thinks this is really fertile ground to say, I'm not enough, I'm not doing it right, I'm failing in this area, I'm failing in that area. It's really just breaks my heart how flagrant some of the criticisms of an inner critic can be. So that's the first area, is when we're stressed. We're more vulnerable to that default, that habitual way for many of us of thinking. And the second area, and this may surprise some listeners where the inner critic can pop up, is when we're up to something big and juicy. Okay, and this will make sense in a little bit, that the inner critic thrives on stability and comfort. So if you're going for it, if you are thinking about a promotion or running your first half marathon or going back to school, the inner critic says, whoa, this is a little scary. So I'm going to show up to keep us safe and to keep you down. So I know even when I've done anything in my life of significance, the inner critic came along and had its way with me. You know, so I say that to people so they really know when you are up to something big in your life and the critic shows up, you want to hear the voice. You don't necessarily want to give it a vote. And we'll talk about some strategies later, but it is not uncommon. And I say that just means, hello, you're up to something. You're on your growing edge. So it doesn't necessarily mean you should stop. It just means, ooh, this is novel. This is exciting. And there's a little bit of natural hesitancy. And that's totally normal when we're up to something juicy and big.
I love that. I can raise my hand to like having like both of those examples. And you know, and it reminds me when you were talking about the stress of actually, it's like when we're going along, when we kind of have everything in line, we know what's going on, we know our, you know, we're comfortable with the place we're in, we're comfortable, we have control the way everything is running, there's not a lot of stress and stuff goes along very nicely. But a lot of times when something else enters the mix, like you mentioned the COVID and the pandemic, or a lot of times when people experience like a life event, like, you know, having a new child, changing a job, getting married, getting divorced, something like that, I know that's when the systems that they have set up to maybe handle the physical clutter, or their inner critic is calm, that gets completely out of whack, and the clutter will show up and all that kind of stuff, because it's like that's the way that the stress is showing up.
Yeah, and we're vulnerable. Those are periods of vulnerability, and in those periods of vulnerability, we go to our comforts, and whether it's ice cream, or, you know, buying extra things off of Amazon, or having that voice in our head. And even if it's a negative voice of the inner critic, for many of us, there's a comfort in that. Unfortunately, we become habituated to that. There's a comfort in that. And that's something, that's why it's so important to get conscious of it, so we can be more aware and then have choices. Mm-hmm. So we have choices for ourselves about what voices we're really listening to and what behaviors are really life-giving and not just kind of shortcuts or in the moment ways of comforting ourselves, but don't really nourish ourselves. Like that pint of ice cream, it comforts us in the moment, but is it nourishing? You know, we couldn't sustain a diet of that.
Exactly. Well, you made me think of like I was thinking of the fact that, you know, like there is some comfort in the inner critic voice. And I was also thinking about, you know, when I tell my followers, when you've got clutter, when you have physical clutter, it's doing something for you. It's there. You have it there for a reason. It's supporting you in some way. So I'm sure that there are some benefits to this inner critic as well. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, that's such a great point. And you're very insightful to recognize that in your work with your followers and how it would translate to the inner critic. And I think you're really touching on something important, which is having that curiosity, because I believe that anything that is of us is holy, meaning it's not there. There's nothing wrong with us. There's nothing wrong with us. So I've seen some practitioners actually say, you know, you want to banish your inner critic, you want to, you know, kick it, you want to basically get into a tussle with it. And I say, no. Number one, it doesn't work. And number two, it's not beneficial. Then you will actually miss the nugget. And from my experience, Leanne, the benefit of the inner critic is that it serves a purpose if we pay attention. And how do we pay attention? Well, we have to realize, number one, that its primary purpose, as I alluded to before, is to keep us safe. To keep us safe and to keep us from being hurt. And so the inner critic often has this grain of truth. It just expresses itself in a very inelegant and kind of primitive way, which makes sense because, again, we generated the inner critic when we were quite young. So what does that mean? It means, like, for example, in my life, when I wanted to write a book, which I had wanted to write a book, and maybe some of your viewers and followers will relate to this. You have a dream for a long, long time and it just paralyzes you. Well, for me, that was writing a book. And it took a long time. And once I finally had the courage, it was a time of great vulnerability for me. My mom had just died, and that really moved me, as it does for many people when you lose someone you love, to say, look, this is not a dress rehearsal. And so I was broken open, and that kind of was a catalyst for writing the book. But more importantly, that inner critic showed up right away saying, who are you to write a book? You don't know the difference between an adverb and an ad lib. You know, you're going to write a really bad book. And so the kernel of truth, if I just ignored it or tried to get in a wrestling match with the inner critic, I wouldn't have learned that it had a kernel of truth, which was, you know what? I could write a really bad book. Is it possible? Totally. Am I a professional writer? No. So when I listened and I said, you know what, critic, you're right. If I don't get a copy editor, in fact, get two of them, if I don't work with an editor, if I don't reach out to other memoirists, if I don't do X, Y, and Z, chances are I'm going to write a really bad book and no one's going to want to publish it or read it. So that truth, that possibility served me because it said, okay, what are the things I need to do to make sure I write a respectable book? Is it going to be a bestseller? No. Does it need to be? No. Is it going to be the best book in my ability that will help and touch other people? Yes. So that was an example of the grain of truth. And I think if people understand that there's nothing evil about the critic, it's really more like a tantruming child that just needs a moment of our attention and compassion. Mm-hmm. And we need to find out what it wants and then move on. We don't overindulge that spoiled tantruming child, but we do, like, say, what is the pain here? What is the message? And 9 times out of 10, the critic just wants to keep us safe. And my critic was scared I'd write a book and I'd be embarrassed by it. I'd write a book and I'd get criticized. I'd write a book and people would not like what I had to say. Those are valid concerns. So I had to learn how to have a dialogue with my critic to soothe it, actually.
I love that. I love that explanation. Like, actually, don't dismiss your inner critic. Listen to what your inner critic is trying to tell you. And this also, it kind of reminds me, I think, is it Elizabeth Gilbert that told some story about, it's like, you know, like fear coming along. It's like, let fear come along. Just don't let fear drive. Fear has to sit in the back.
That's right. I always say, don't let it be in the driver's seat, but it's there. So give it a seat. You know, Rumi has a beautiful poem. I encourage anyone to look it up. Rumi, who's a mystic, a Sufi mystic. He's got beautiful writing, but one of his poems is called The Guest House. And he writes about welcoming every emotion, every bitter, difficult, challenging experience or emotion, welcoming it in as if it's a guest from beyond. And it's a beautiful metaphor. And he says it much better than that and more obviously poetically. And I think it's something that we can all learn from, is how do we actually welcome rather than banish these, because they're all parts of us. Mm-hmm. So why would we be cruel to a part of ourselves? You know, then we're criticizing the critic, and are we really growing? No, we don't want to use the same, you know, the same tactic.
So what's available to people who really learn how to work with their inner critic?
Well, I love how you phrase that, to work with your inner critic. Thank you for not saying banish it, because I don't think it's possible. It's not necessary. And as we just discussed, it's not even helpful, because you might miss that nugget, that nugget of truth. So the way I look at it, and there's lots and lots of techniques, I'll just kind of boil it down to a few principles that I think may help folks. And the first is, you want to forge a relationship with your inner critic. You want to have the mindset. You're not going to flee from it, and you're not going to fight it. You're going to forge a relationship with your inner critic. And know that you have the fortitude to do that. It is not bigger than you. You are so vast. We're all so incredibly vast. And there's so many beautiful voices in us. So the inner critic is just one. And so it's first telling yourself, hey, critic, I'm going to forge a relationship with you. We're going to work this out together. I know you have my best interest at heart. You know, in one of my heroes, Mr. Rogers says, and this is a great, if you're looking for Netflix, you know, there's a Mr. Rogers documentary that came out and then the movie with Tom Hanks, and they're both worth finding. And Mr. Rogers used to say, if you can mention it, you can manage it. If you can mention it, you can manage it. And this leads to the first real action that people can take. Once you get the philosophy, you're going to forge a relationship. Then you say, well, what does that look like? How do I forge a relationship? First thing you can do, get out your kids' crayons. It's fun. Draw a picture of your inner critic. Just have at it. What does your inner critic look like? And represent it. Use those colors. You know, I won't give you too many ideas because you're going to have your own. Draw a picture of your inner critic. Write down some of its favorite sayings, like you're not enough, you're so stupid, you're not, you know, ambitious enough. Write down the sayings and then give your critic a name. So my inner critic's name is called the ruler. And I should have brought the picture, but it's literally a picture of a ruler, a 12-inch ruler with a crown on its head. So it's like a double entendre, right? Okay. So that ruler, like I know, which represents like never measuring up. So my critic would always tell me, I'm not enough. I don't measure up. And it would have that tyranny over me. And so once I recognized it and was able to draw it, I'm objectifying it. Huge, huge help to really realizing that it is not of me. It is a voice in my head. And then I can forge that relationship. So now I talk back, not just to the inner critic, but to my inner critic, which is the ruler. So that's huge. You say you're going to have a relationship, you draw it, you name it. And then the third thing you do is you listen to the dialogue. You actually, when your inner critic's acting up, when you're up to something big, when you're having a difficult day of stress and your inner critic is showing up, sit down and give it 3 minutes of your time and say, okay, critic, what's on your mind? And for some people, they can do this just in a quiet way. Some people find journaling helps, but get in a dialogue and ask your inner critic, what do you need? And what are you afraid of? And you will find in your wisdom, you will find the wisdom of the inner critic at that moment. What are you afraid of and what do you need? It can be very illuminating. And then you want to talk back and say, thank you. Thank you. I know you have my best interest at heart. You know what? I got this. Or you know what? I will take that concern into consideration and I'm going to do X, Y, and Z to address it. And then you move forward on your goal, your role, your passion. So that's it in a nutshell. And there's a lot more to say, Leanne, but I wanted to condense it into something that I thought were meaningful and useful nuggets for your audience.
I can't wait to draw mine and see what she looks like.
Yeah, and you could be surprised. It could be a she, it could be a he, it could be an it. So give yourself permission to go where you go with it. And I'd love to see it too. So feel free to post and maybe people can share in the Facebook group or contact me and share. And just what you just did, Leanne, is so beautiful. And this happens in my workshops as well. Once people draw it, they giggle. And that alone creates some levity. And we realize, huh, okay, we don't have to take ourselves so darn seriously. And just that humor, especially when people do this in groups, you know, and people realize I'm not alone, I'm not the only one, and we can laugh at ourselves and laugh at each other in very good, warm-hearted ways. That's a wonderful technique for just taking off the edge. Just feeling, okay, I got this. I'm human.
I love that. That's wonderful. So you know what? I also want to touch on your program, the You Matter Marathon. So tell us more about what that is.
And I'll connect the dots for listeners right now. The dot is, so in my work with the inner critic and coaching and speaking to women, it's really about reminding ourselves that I matter. Like I matter and my inner chatter matters, right? And I need to get on my own side in life. and clear the clutter metaphorically and practically so I can have my best life possible. Well, what I found is that this whole concept of mattering actually has an interpersonal and community-oriented aspect as well. And one day, very briefly, a few years ago, I was in a grocery store and I was standing behind a woman at the checkout line who told the cashier what a hard time she was having. She said her husband just lost his job, her son was battling addiction, and she didn't know if she'd make it through the holidays. And my heart ached. I wasn't sure what I should do. Should I pay for her groceries, ask for her husband's resume? What? So I did nothing until we were in the parking lot and returning our carts at the same time. And I summoned my courage and I went up to her and I said, "It sounds like you're having a really hard time right now. I'm so sorry. I just want to give you something." And I gave her a card and she read the card and she started to cry. And she said, "You have no idea what this means to me." And the words on the card,
I love that.
Mm-hmm. You matter. Mm-hmm. A few weeks earlier, a friend had given me a card. It was a different design, but it had these words, "You matter." And Leanne, I'm telling you, it went straight into my soul. Mm-hmm. And I was so moved by the power of the gesture and these words that I ordered cards and I started sharing them. And the impact of sharing these cards was so significant, not just on the people who received them, the people in my community and my friends, but on me. And I felt so empowered. And I realized that in sharing a card, not only am I honoring the significance of the other, but I'm simultaneously honoring my own significance. And it felt so darn good. I had to share this. So in 2016, I started something called the You Matter Marathon, no running required, really important, no running required, and invited people to share one You Matter card a day in November, the month of Thanksgiving. And to make it so easy that nobody could say, "No, I don't want to do this," I mailed out 30 You Matter cards for free to everyone who signed up to participate, no matter where they were in the world. And my hope, and this was, you know, talk about having an inner critic. I'm like, oh my gosh, like who's going to want to do this with me? My hope was in that first year, we could get 10,000 cards shared. And that would have been 333 people giving out 30 cards. And I thought, well, if I know 100 people and they each tell two people, maybe we can get there. Well, I will tell you, we have now given out over 1.5 million cards in all states in 78 countries. We got our 78th country last week, Uganda. And it's just taken off. And this will be our fifth year this November. And I'm just tickled. And we have groups like schools and religious organizations and community groups. You can just imagine how many people, especially now, more important than ever. I mean, what has this pandemic said? If it hasn't taught us anything, it's that other people matter. Our relationships, our hugs, our touch, our significance, and so many people, and with the what's going on with the civic and the social unrest, people need to hear this message and we need to give it. And so you are such a gift to me to give me this platform to share this. And again, the cards are free. With groups, we still send out 30 cards. If you were a school, we'd send you 30 cards, but we tell you how you can either print them or purchase them, and the cards are not expensive. But for large groups, there is a charge for cards, but it's like 500 cards for $20. I mean, so it's, there's no reason people can't participate. And people can sign up now at youmattermarathon.com. Youmattermarathon.com.
Well, you know, first of all, I have to say that is just, that's an astounding thing. I want everybody here to order these cards and do this in November. And of course, there will be a link below this video to where you can get the cards. And also, I know that what I'll do come November, I'll start talking about this. So
start in October, because yes, we have to get the cards. September, October, anytime. Thank right. you.
But you know, I was thinking about, you know, you when you started giving out the cards, how you got so much back. And I was actually thinking about that little 11-year-old girl in camp who, when you were helping your friends not be homesick, you got something back. And it's just such a, you know, it's such a string, you know,
like a circle. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, that's the one benefit of aging. I might say this, that I find that in reflection, I just see the arc of my own journey, and that's valuable. Like, it feels really meaningful to see that. And you're so astute. I mean, you're a wonderful interviewer because you're able to connect those dots, and that's a gift you have. And I think for me, the arc has been about mattering to self, myself. Do I matter? So I wrote the book. Where have I been all my life? Because for a long time, I didn't know that I mattered. I knew how to make other people feel like they mattered, but that's not a recipe for long-term success. Mm-hmm. That's a recipe for burnout and resentment. So I had to do a lot of work to shore up the message that I matter. But you know what? A life of just I matter is hollow and heartless. So it's really about the both and that's what sharing, in this case, a You Matter card enforces or generates that synchronicity. And the synchrony is probably about, there is synchronicity, but there's synchrony in the moment when you share a You Matter card with someone. That beautiful alchemy.
I love that. That is so beautiful. And I can't wait to start sharing them myself. So I'm looking forward to that. All right, Cheryl, I have a couple of other questions for you. What was your favorite book as a child?
This was an easy one. Where the Sidewalk Ends by Shel Silverstein. I just
She had so
love those poems. Love those poems. Love them. That was my favorite book.
Now, what's a movie that you can practically quote from start to finish?
A movie called Witness with Harrison Ford and Kelly McGillis. It came out. Do you know that movie? It's a beautiful film. I recommend it. Harrison Ford in his prime, and he plays a detective, and it's got everything. It's got romance, an Amish farm, a love story, and I can't resist that one.
Okay. Got it. I love that. Now, I believe you have a gift for the audience, correct?
Yes, it's downloadable. Actually, I think in this case, we're asking people to text. We got a little bit fancy asking people to text a number, and they'll get an article just for you all called 8 Steps to Stopping Your People-Pleasing Ways. And it's just very simple thoughts that, you know, and I say, if you get one or two nuggets out of it, just take the best and leave the rest. So that's the gift from my heart to yours.
I can't wait to see that, because I am like the original people pleaser. And it's like, and I've been working to bust that for years and years. So I know that I can use some of those tips. I'm looking forward to that. And so we will absolutely have the number for you guys to text under this interview. So you'll be able to get to that. So that's a very useful thing. I imagine that the inner critic and the people pleaser go really hand in hand. So.
Oh, for sure. Right. You can be in overdrive, as you know, the inner critic. I must always please people. I cannot say no. You know, I mean, boundaries, I'm sure that work comes up. That word comes up a lot in your work with clutter. You know, it's also a boundary issue.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Right. Good.
Now then, if you could leave people with one action that they can take to help them declutter their life, what would that be?
This was so hard. I would say the one thing I'm going to say right now is remind yourself every day that you matter. The world needs you, not your stuff.
Got it. I love that. You know what, Cheryl? I have so enjoyed speaking with you today. This was such a meaningful and useful interview. I just can't wait for folks to hear this and really, really learn how to deal with their inner critic and learn about your You Matter Marathon. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for the gift of this opportunity. It truly was a gift for me, and I'm just so delighted to be able to have this opportunity to share these messages with folks. So you're the best. Thank you, Leanne.
You are very welcome. Audience, I want you to make sure to look in your email box in the morning. We're going to have 2 more really good A-Share Space interviews ready and waiting for you. So until then, I'll see you later. Bye-bye.